Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Thank you so much for joining me each and every Saturday and telling your friends and your family and your coworkers. I saw 110 patients this week. I don't know how I did it. 70 people on Tuesday and 40 patients on Thursday. It just seems like every single person eventually finds out, you know, he has a radio show. And then they listen, and this is great, from all over California and all walks of life. And I really appreciate you spending Saturdays with me. I look forward to it just as much as you do. I knew today's guest was going to be talking about surfing, which is what I'm particularly fond of. But these two guys are NASA aerospace engineers who decided to make the material of the surfboard no longer from the World War II technology, but from NASA, because they're aerospace guys. So rather than making it out of the foam that traditionally is used, they made it out of the same material they make the helicopter blades and the Challenger and the space shuttle, to make the surfboard lighter, faster, stronger. And it made me think all week, what a challenge it is to break ground on a new technology. How difficult it must be. You could have the best idea in the world. The Wright brothers, it's got to be the greatest invention of the 20th century. No one in America was interested. They had to go to Europe to impress everybody in Europe and then come back to America as a hero. Jimi Hendrix, the greatest guitar player of all time, could not get a job in America. He had to be discovered by the bass player of the Animals, the British band, who schlepped him back to London, became a hero in London in the 60s, and then Jimi Hendrix came back as a star into the United States. He's from Seattle. It's difficult to break the ice with a new idea and new technology. And that difficulty is what I wanted to talk about today. The marketing aspect of a new great idea, and where the difficulties lie. So, Michael Nesmith wrote a song called Different Drum. He's one of the members of the Monkees. The guy should not be singing, because this is what it sounds like when the guy who wrote the song is singing the song.
Don't get me wrong, it's not that I knock it, it's
oy vey. Can you imagine? He wrote this song, so he's entitled to sing it, but I don't want to listen to that. But you know who I want to listen to? This woman, the great. It's good, I just completely forgot her name. Linda Ronstadt, that's right. Don't get old, Steve Paulette. There we go. Maybe if I played it, I would have remembered her name. I almost said Gladys Goldstein, but I don't know any singer. Listen to how beautiful this is. This is the right person singing the song, but she didn't write the song. This whole idea of having the right connections is fascinating to me. So, in tennis, there were wooden rackets. Wimbledon just finished. The U.S. Open's going to start in Forest Hills soon. Trust me, all those tennis players are playing with graphite metal rackets, but it wasn't always that way. They played with wooden rackets. And if you were really good at playing with a wooden racket, you can tell me it's lighter, faster, stronger, can spin it better because you can tighten the strings. But if you're really good at using a wooden racket like John McEnroe was, why would you want to change? Here's Pete Sampras, one of the greatest tennis players of all time, talking about why John McEnroe was so good with a wooden racket. Why would he ever want to change to a metal racket?
McEnroe was so, absolutely, he was a great athlete, and he was so unique in the way he hit the ball. I mean, the way he served, the way he volleyed, it was all touch and just beautiful to watch. I can't see a player in the next 50 years or, you know, to play like McEnroe. I mean, because you're just born like that. You're just born with the hands and the feel he's got and his anticipation. I mean, it's so unique because the way I play is pretty straightforward. I mean, the way he kind of glides around is something that I've never seen before and probably won't see as long as I'm living.
There are two surfers, Joel Tudor and Tom Curran. These two guys can take a piece of plywood from the lumberyard and stand on it and make it look like the most high-performance surfboard ever. I don't think Joel Tudor or Tom Curran is going to need a faster, stronger, lighter surfboard. But Robbie Clapper could definitely use better equipment to get closer to these guys who are elite. So it's an interesting thing. You've got to realize who your audience is. You want to make something that lots of people want to use, then you got to appeal to the everyman. Because John McEnroe ain't going to change from the wooden racket so fast because he's the best at playing tennis with the wooden racket. Here's Arthur Ashe talking about John McEnroe.
The most talented, easily.
Why? What is the he have?
Great hands. He can do things with his hands that the rest of us have to, by the numbers, out of an army manual, think about doing. He doesn't have to
think.
It's
just instinctive and automatic for him.
It's just there. The timing is there.
Yeah. He seems to keep the ball on the racket longer than anybody. I mean, it's almost like he pushes it further than anyone else.
Yeah, he's someone you cannot copy.
That's Arthur Ashe talking to Charlie Rose about John McEnroe. Here's McEnroe himself. His ego is so beautifully big. He thinks he can take on the world even with the wooden racket, but he realizes that's silly. But you put a metal racket in his hands, he still thinks he can do it better. But maybe he won't be the best in the world because the spin and all the cool things he can do with the wooden racket, he's overpowered because Rafael Nadal can take that graphite thing and shove the ball down his throat.
I think we'd do great. Now, I think that Borg was our generation's Nadal. Great athlete, extremely fast. Sort of a combination of Nadal on clay and Djokovic's defensive skills. So I think athletically that he was right there. As a matter of fact, I think he's faster than any one of them in a foot race. We played with wood rackets, so it's almost impossible to sort of compare actually how we would do in a sense.
In a sense.
The strings has become a big issue, a big, you could say, problem. Certainly, it's, you watch, you know, the other word I thought when you said Nadal was spin, because I've never seen a guy hit spin the way Rafael Nadal's hit spin. I actually practiced with him one time. I've only practiced with him, and it was before the semifinals of the Wimbledon in 2008. He was playing a right-hander. I'm left-handed.
But the power you can generate just will overpower you with your wooden racket.
We got the chance to go out there, and right away, the intensity that he played with, he was sort of like a bigger, stronger version, and as intense a version as Connors in practice. You know, first ball, it feels like you're about to take your head off. And this amount of spin, like, because I tried, okay, I said, I'll give him that lefty slice and give him something and volley and show him the old school. And it was unbelievable, the amount of the velocity and also the amount of rotation that he got on the ball. It's something that the ultimate nightmare for me at my best would be to play Nadal on clay. That would be the ultimate, the last thing in the world I'd want to do.
McEnroe is the last guy in the world who's going to adopt graphite, metal racket, until the day comes when he realizes it's over. Joel Tudor, Tom Curran are the last guys they're going to want an aerospace-driven surfboard that's lighter, faster, stronger. They don't need it because they're so good. But if you want to make a successful business, you want to revolutionize the world, you know who you can learn from? You learn from the guy who made the iPhone. He changed the music industry. He changed every industry we know. There'd be no Uber if it wasn't for this guy. And Uber came around after he died. This is what a prophet, this is what a visionary Steve Jobs was, because he realized the person you want to appeal to is not the McEnroes, but actually the Robbie Clappers who don't know how to use a computer. Those are the guys who buy all the computers. If you can get the everyman, the guy who doesn't know the difference between double click and right click, if you make it easier for him to use a computer, then the whole world's buying your product. Listen to Steve Jobs. This is 2007. the day the iPhone came into existence.
This is a day I've been looking forward to for 2.5 years. Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything. And Apple has been, well, first of all, one's very fortunate if you get to work on just one of these in your career. Apple's been very fortunate. It's been able to introduce a few of these into the world.
So listen to how he sets it up for those of you who want to learn about marketing. This is a PhD course in marketing. First, he makes it personal. He is Apple. Then he tells you equity. I've done this before. We've shown you the future before. You can trust us again. Here's a new product. It's just brilliant when you really analyze Talmudically what he's doing here.
1984, we introduced the Macintosh. It didn't just change Apple. It changed the whole computer industry. In 2001, we introduced the first iPod. And it didn't just change the way we all listen to music. It changed the entire music industry.
And listen to how he says, we introduced. Steve Jobs was very comfortable in his own skin not being an engineer, not being a computer programmer. When Wozniak mocked him and said, you're going, you know, when he went crazy, firing everybody and really behaving badly, Wozniak says, you know what? How did you get to this position? I'm the one who built the hardware. I'm the one who, you're not even an engineer. You're not even a programmer. But Steve Jobs' response was, Seiji Ozawa is the conductor of the Boston Pops. They're Philharmonic. Seiji Ozawa cannot play an instrument, but Seiji Ozawa is the best in the world because he knows how to play the orchestra. Steve Jobs said to Wozniak, I may not be an engineer or computer programmer, but I play the orchestra. And I can tell you, you can be the greatest computer engineer in the world. You ain't getting into everybody's pocket with their iPhone unless you got Steve Jobs doing what you're listening to him do right now. It's a masterpiece of sales.
Today, we're introducing three revolutionary products.
No, it's one, but he's saying three.
The first one is a widescreen iPod with touch controls. The second is a revolutionary mobile phone. And the third is a breakthrough internet communications device.
Listen to this.
So,
Three things.
A widescreen iPod with touch controls, a revolutionary mobile phone, and a breakthrough internet communications device.
Three things that are one thing.
An iPod, a phone, and an internet communicator.
Are you getting it?
An iPod, a phone. Are you getting it?
It's like Shaq saying, can you dig it?
These are not three separate devices.
That's right.
This is one device. And we are calling it iPhone. Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
So he's telling you, you're going to get three things, three amazing things, not just one, but it really is just one thing. So that's the next analysis of this masterclass in taking over an industry, whether it's surfboards, whether it's tennis, whether it's surgery and a new operation to do. You're not just getting one thing, you're getting three things.
Let me talk about a category of things. The most advanced phones are called smartphones. So they say, And they typically combine a phone plus some email capability, plus they say it's the internet, sort of the baby internet, into one device. And they all have these plastic little keyboards on them. And the problem is that they're not so smart and they're not so easy to use.
So here's the next thing you got to do when you're introducing something revolutionary and brand new. You got to mock what's currently there. First, he calls them smartphones, which is generic. Guess what he does now? Now he starts actually naming the names.
Why do we need a revolutionary user interface? I mean, here's four smartphones, right? Motorola Q, the BlackBerry, Palm Treo, Nokia E62, the usual suspects. And what's wrong with their user interfaces? Well, the problem with them is really sort of in the bottom 40 there. It's this stuff right here. They all have these keyboards that are there whether you need them or not to be there. And they all have these control buttons that are fixed in plastic and are the same for every application. Well, every application wants a slightly different user interface.
He sees the future.
A slightly optimized set of buttons just for it. And what happens if you think of a great idea 6 months from now? You can't run around and add a button to these things. They're already shipped. So what do? It doesn't work because the buttons and the controls can't change. They can't change for each application, and they can't change down the road if you think of another great idea you want to add to this product.
He's not even calling it apps at this point because they don't exist. He's calling them future applications. You're listening to a prophet.
Well, how do you solve this? It turns out we have solved it. We solved it in computers 20 years ago. We solved it with a bitmap screen that could display anything we want, put any user interface up, and a pointing device. We solved it with the mouse, right? We solved this problem. So how are we going to take this to a mobile device? Well, what we're going to do is get rid of all these buttons and just make a giant screen.
And here's the orthopedics. You're going to use your fingers.
How are we going to communicate this? We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Who wants a stylus? You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Yuck. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. We're going to use the best pointing device in the world. We're going to use a pointing device that we're all born with. We're born with 10 of them. We're going to use our fingers. We're going to touch this with our fingers. And we have invented a new technology called multi-touch, which is phenomenal. It works like magic.
So the moral of the story is, if you want to make a profit, P-R-O-F-I-T, you got to be a prophet, P-R-O-P-H-E-T. And that's what Steve Jobs was, appealing to every man and woman, not the computer nerd. It's genius. Coming up next, the clinic will be open. The number is 877-710-ESPN. And I'm going to go take you into the operating room this week. I saw someone with cysts, fluid-filled sacs coming out of their knee, but they came from their meniscus. I'm going to explain that coming up next. If you've hurt your knee, let me know. The number is 877-710-ESPN. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors show here on ESPN LA 710. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Creedence Clearwater. That's pretty good. I knew that, Steve Paulette. We're celebrating thanks to the great Donna Aiello, who reminded me that today exactly is the 50th anniversary of the men landing on the moon. One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. The great Neil Armstrong. That's a great line. And then I think he then took the golf club and he took a shot with the golf club on top of the moon, which is fabulous. All right, the lines are lit up. Stay on the lines. I'll get to all of you, I hope. We'll probably have enough time. I have to just cool in on the stories. Let's do the clinic. It'll be fun. Let's go to Connie in Laverne. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Hi, Dr. Clapper. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure, Connie. So Jean Crawford says that women are not listening during the week. They're just listening to the Weekend Warrior show on Saturdays. Is that true?
He is absolutely correct.
I love Jean Crawford. So what do you do for a living?
I work in finance.
Finance. So you're very good with numbers.
I'm good with numbers.
Do you know the law of nines?
I do not.
This is the coolest thing. Are you ready for this? And I'm not a math guy. 9 times 2 is 18. 1 and 8 adds up to 9. 9 times 3 is 27. 7 plus 2 adds up to 9. 9 times 4 is 36. 3 and 6 becomes a 9. Right? And all the way 45 is 5 plus 4. It's unbelievable.
That is unbelievable.
How did that happen?
I don't know.
This is why when you look up into space and you see this thing with the Big Dipper and the Little Dipper, and you go, yeah, it's a straight line. It makes a box. It makes a dipper. I think randomly, cool things just seem to happen, right?
I agree.
Okay. How can I help you? What'd you do to yourself?
Well, I have an issue on each knee. One is a torn meniscus due to a fall.
Yes.
And the doctor tells me that it's in an area that doesn't have the blood supply, I guess.
Yes.
And so I'm not sure. He said eventually when I can't stand the pain, then I would have to have surgery. So I wanted to see what your thoughts were on that.
No, that's my thoughts. And I'm going to explain why in a second. Go ahead. What's the other knee?
And then the other knee, it's I get this. I can't lean on it. As soon as I lean on it, it feels like it's being ripped in two.
There you go. Okay. So you're how old? 53. Where did you grow up? What did your father do for a living?
I didn't have a father, but I grew up in the same area, Laverne, Glendora.
Right. What does Laverne mean? Because in Spanish, la is something female, and Vern, what does Vern mean in Spanish?
I don't know, but probably great.
Yeah, no, exactly. I don't even know where that is. All I know is that you probably get on the 10, and you eventually get to Laverne. That's the New Yorker solution to Los Angeles, by the way.
10.
So, here's my answer to you. You're 53 years old. You're not calling me and being 33 years old. So, 53 years old, I'm going to tell you that even the crappy, lousy meniscus that you now have, that's torn, that's shredded, that's ripping, and all the stuff that you feel and they see on the MRI, Connie, you at least have a cushion. It may not be perfect, but you have a cushion. You know what's going to happen when you remove at 53 that not so good meniscus, you are now going to not have a pad there anymore, and you're going to rub the two bones closer together because the pad's gone and get to needing me to do a knee replacement that much sooner, which I'm happy to do, by the way. But wouldn't it be great to not have to do that? And if you think a needle of cortisone, stem cells, Synvit, all this, no needles, my opinion, other people can have their opinion, my opinion, don't let them put a needle in that knee joint of yours. Now, do I do arthroscopy of knees? Yes, hundreds of them every year. But I do them when people come to me and they say, I can't straighten my knee anymore. It's stuck. It's almost like there's a doorstop stuck inside the joint. You have that kind of a mechanical situation. That's a different story. But if you have full range of motion and you're dealing with pain, here's the vision. I want you to recognize that if you went into your backyard, which I'm sure is beautiful in Laverne with lots of roses, and you clipped 50 roses, the next day you'd have a blister in your hand because you clipped 50 roses. And you would say, Dr. Clapper, I can't even pick up a pencil now. What should I do with the blisters that are in my hand? And I would say, Connie, go back to the backyard and clip another 10 roses. And you'd say, what are you, crazy? I just told you I can't pick up a pencil because I got a blister in my hand from clipping 50 of them. And I would say, trust me, Connie, the blister needs to be rubbed a little bit more because it eventually you will get a callus and then you won't have any pain in your hand. And you'll go, you want me to rub the blister to make a callus? Yes. You currently have a blister. Your meniscus is a blister now. It's ripped, it's shredded, it's inflamed. How can you make it into a callus? There's a book I wrote with Linda Huey called Heal Your Knees, all about the pool, the bike, the elliptical. You know what I hate for your knee, Connie? Treadmill, lunges, squats, stair machines, weights. Don't do those. I'm from New York. We hate things. I hate that for you. You need to do the pool, the bike, the elliptical. And you ain't going to be better in 2 weeks. Hang in there. All of July, all of August, by September, both of your knees are going to feel better. I guarantee you'll feel better. How much better, I don't know. But you need to hang in there and not adulterate the situation, in my opinion, with shots, pills, or an arthroscopy at 53 years old. Unless it's stuck. That's a different story. Okay?
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Connie, I want you to do me a favor. I just did you a favor. Find a total stranger today. Do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me.
I will do that.
All right. God bless you.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Oh, no problem. Let's go to Jeffrey in Hollywood. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Dr. Clapper, hello. How are you this morning?
Great. Nice to talk to you. You listen every Saturday?
And I love your zest for life. I love the show.
Thank you so much, and thanks for telling all your friends. I appreciate it. Well, what do you do for a living?
Well, right now, I'm actually temping, so I'm doing physical work and while I wait to get back into the entertainment industry.
Good for you. Where'd you grow up?
Illinois. University of Illinois is where I went to school.
Oh, my God. Not Champaign-Urbana.
Yes, sir.
So do you know the story of the man who owns the Jacksonville Jaguars who went to Champaign for school?
I don't.
One of the greatest stories I learned about this past year, and I did a whole show about. His name is Shad Khan. You got to hear this story. Okay. Shad Khan is a Pakistani Muslim. If you think there's trouble nowadays, can you imagine coming to America as a Pakistani Muslim in the 60s?
Oh, my God.
But his dad was a surveyor in Pakistan. He's one of the richest men in the world right now, by the way. Let me just give you the final result. But he came to America because he watched his dad in Pakistan in the 60s as a surveyor. Every time he got into trouble with a project, he would always call for help and look into the engineers that came out of, it seemed, from Chicago. So Shad Khan said, you know what? There's something special. These guys seem to be able to help my dad. They come from America. They come from Chicago. And he fell in love with engineering, and he wanted to be an architect like Frank Lloyd Wright. This was his dream. So in 1967, he's 15 years old. He somehow figures out, applies to go to the University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana, which is a more rural area. It's not Chicago. It's Illinois. It's Champaign-Urbana, or the rural area, to school. He gets there, and Shad Khan starts studying architecture. And he realizes, because they have a job fair, that engineers get paid the most, the architects the least. So he switches to become an engineer. He graduates he's not even 20 years old. He graduates from the University of Illinois, 1970, and he goes to get a job. And he realizes, and by the way, when he arrives to start at University of Illinois, he has only $500 in his pocket. So he sees, where am I going to live? Well, the dorm is too expensive. Someone says for $2 a night, you can stay in the Y. So he stays $2 a night in the Y. Now he realizes he's going to use up this $500 in no time. He needs a job. So he walks around the campus and he gets a job, $1.25 an hour, as a dishwasher. And in his interview, he says, I'm the richest man in the world. I'm richer than 99% of the people in Pakistan. I have a place to live and I have a job. Shad Khan thought he died and went to heaven. He completes his degree as an engineering major. But do you think anyone in Illinois is going to hire a Pakistani Muslim in 1970? No, it's not going to happen. So the only job Shad Khan says he got was for a farmer who had a side job as a blacksmith, okay? Putting the horseshoes on horses and stuff. This is 1970 we're talking about.
Right.
And what Shad Khan realizes is in 1970, pickup trucks were not a recreational vehicle like they are now. They were owned by farmers. They were workhorses, basically. And the farmers would crash them all the time on the farm and ruin the bumper. So they would come to this farmer, the blacksmith, to make a bumper for their pickup truck. So it would take 2 months. It was heavy. And you needed four pieces of metal to weld together and buff it. It took forever. And it was heavy on the truck. And Shad Khan said to himself, hey, I majored in engineering at the University of Illinois. I should be able to do this better. So he went to the library, and he came up with a way of making a single piece of metal lighter, easier to make, quicker, faster, and they could charge the same amount for it, a bumper for the truck for the farmers. And guess what happened? They all started to tell each other. So all the farmers in Illinois would go to this blacksmith because Shad Khan came up with this way to make a cheaper, better, faster, lighter bumper. The farmer looks at him after 2 years of working with him and says, you know, I've made more money in these 2 years with you with this fakakta bumper business than I've made as a farmer my whole life. We should make this into a business. Anyway, make a long story short, and he talks about kismet. He talks about how lucky he was because the only job he could get was with this farmer, which led to him figuring out how to make the bumpers. He is the largest manufacturer of bumpers for trucks all over the world, from Toyota, Mitsubishi, the American. Shad Khan is the subcontractor for all the bumpers on the trucks in the world. So he's a billionaire, wow. And he owns the Jacksonville Jaguars. And you, as an alumnus of the University of Illinois, should be extremely proud that the only Pakistani Muslim to own a professional sports team in America is in Jacksonville. And people ask him, why'd you buy the Jacksonville Jaguars of all teams? You know what he says? It's the only team they would let me buy.
There you go.
Anyway, you got to hold on a second. I have to pay some bills, and then I'm going to continue talking to you because I did all the talking, and it's your phone call. Can you imagine? That's amazing, Jeffrey.
Great.
All right, hold on a second. Let me pay some bills, and I'm going to get right back to you. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors show here on ESPN LA 710. Man, you help me. I'm high up in these scenes. I just love this guy. Sixto Rodriguez. I love that his name is Sixto because he was the sixth child for this mother. It was fantastic. Actually, when I was doing OBGYN, one of the babies delivered, I remember her name was Femali because the mom couldn't think of a name for the baby and just checked the box female. Femali is female. Isn't that crazy? Sixto. Why did you come up with Sixto? Well, you're the sixth kid. All right, let's go back to Jeffrey in Hollywood. You're on with Dr. Clapper on the Weekend Warrior Show. Sorry for that delay.
Dr. Clapper, yes. So back on June 26th, I fell on a standing fall, but fell on my right shoulder. I've had an MRI or an X-ray done that showed a contusion, which I kind of, about 2 weeks later, I pushed for an MRI.
Good.
I got one on Thursday.
You have the report right there?
I don't. I get it back on Monday.
Damn. All right. I'm going to promise you this, Jeffrey.
Yes, sir.
Because you're 58 years old and you're not 28 years old.
Great health.
Good.
Yes, sir.
You could be in the greatest health you want. You're 58, you ain't 28. So either your hair's turning gray or you have no hair on top of your head. The bottom line is we age. It's called altacacaritis, which is a Yiddish term we use at Cedars all the time. But you and I need to talk about your pathology. What actually happened? I get the labrum. I get what arthritis is. But the key question is your rotator cuff, the supraspinatus tendon. What has happened to your rotator cuff in this fall? What's causing the pain? So you do not need dye injected into your shoulder. It's painful and, in my opinion, unnecessary. You're going to get your MRI, and then I'm going to promise you this. I truly, making a promise right now, and Steve Paulette will help. Next week, you're going to call because you're going to have in front of you your MRI report, and you're going to read me the impression, and I'm going to explain to you in Clapper Vision what's the matter, what to do, what's the prognosis, and all of that next week.
I appreciate it so much.
You're very welcome, Jeffrey. All right?
Thank you.
And I want you to find a total stranger today. Do something nice for them. That's all you'll be thanking me.
I always do. Thank you.
God bless you. I appreciate it. So I'll talk to you next week. All right. We'll take one more, Steve Paulette. Okay. Let's go to Jose in Tarzana. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Smokey, how you doing?
Ah, Smokey. I wish my name was Smokey. Oh, my God.
You could always change it.
No, I can't. I can't.
Oh, man, that's a shame.
Thank you.
Maybe Smokey Sisto or Sisto Smokey. Those two would be good.
Hey, listen. What is your favorite story, Jose, you listen to the show?
They're all good. Bee's Bakery, the food, the one you just told about Steve Jobs. They're all great.
Thank you. Thank you for telling your friend.
Great.
Thanks for listening and thanks for the kind words. I appreciate it. What do you do for a living?
I work at the cleaners next to Bee's Bakery. I told you before.
Oh, that's right. Cool. All right. Then what? There better be some black and white cookies in my future.
That's my daughter's favorite.
Okay. Well, it's Dr. Clapper's favorite, too, so I'm expecting
some. Now I know,
Yeah. 800 Dr. West Clapper. Olympic Boulevard. That's where you better send the cookies.
We'll get them there.
Okay. How can I help, Jose? What's up?
Anyway, my son, a few years back, I asked you about it. You told me to get a brace for him. Mm-hmm. He went against your advice, got surgery on it. Mm-hmm. Now, two or three years later, they're saying the bone deteriorated and they can do nothing about it. He's going to have to wait another 5, 10 years, whatever, till he's older. He's 38, till he's older, and then they're just going to do a whole new, or they're going to put a whole new shoulder on it, he said, because they can't do nothing for him.
That's terrible. That is terrible.
And I told him not to do it. I told him, and I couldn't find a brace for him big enough to fit him. That's the only reason why I didn't get it for him.
Well, you know,
surgery, and they made a mess of it.
The only thing I would tell him is this. The shoulder is not a weight-bearing joint, like your lower back, your hip, your knees.
Okay?
And you can get away with a lot of things. I got a lot of patients who have horrible shoulders. In New York, we say horrible. Here, they say horrible.
Yeah, I know.
Horrible. And I would give you the best advice for your son, Jose.
Yeah.
Make him fall in love with swimming, with the breaststroke.
He's doing that a lot.
Okay. That will be the best way for him to buy some significant time, years and years and years, before anyone has to put titanium in plastic. But there are patients in their 40s that I do a lot of shoulder replacements that I've done this to. What are you going to do? You got to make a living. You got to have, the spurs get to be so big, you just got to do something. So have him be a swimmer. The future is bright for him, even if it involves an operation. But for now, he better not be lifting weights that are heavy. He better just stay in the pool. That's the thing that he needs to do. Doing martial arts, doing things that keep your arms strong, Tai Chi, karate, judo, stuff like that, but not push-ups, but keeping himself limber and flexible, yoga, Pilates, these would be great things for him to do.
Great. I told him the bone grows back, but in this case, no, huh?
No, it doesn't.
No. Okay, it doesn't.
And the hair ain't coming back on top of my head either.
That's true. One other thing I heard, this other kid, he's in his 30s. He said he's got the beginnings of arthritis in his hands. He said they injected him with silicone. What the heck is that about?
They better not do that. Let him take up knitting. Rosie Greer. Remember Rosie Greer from the Rams?
I know. Yeah, I heard your
story. I remember. He used to do crocheting and knitting. And nobody's going to make fun of Rosie Greer taking up knitting and crocheting because he could crush anybody. But you know what? In life, the paradox of arthritis is this. The pain becomes so bad, you get stiff and swollen. You know how you combat it? Just like for your son and your son's friend. The more you move it, if you use it, you don't lose it, basically.
Right,
the more you use it, fine motor work like crocheting and knitting would be the best thing for that guy. All right, Jose, thanks so much
for checking in.
All right, God bless you. And I'm waiting for those black and white cookies to come. All right, we'll take a break. We'll pay some bills. Coming back, stay on the line. I'll take your calls. The number is 877-710-ESPN. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. David Bowie. Miss him. He left too early, Steve Paulette. Next week, we're going to talk about, we'll have a medical person on, talking about surfer's ear. All right, let's take a quick call because we're going to have to scoot soon. Let's go to Ralph in Rancho Cucamonga. Ralph, what's a Cucamonga?
I have no idea.
There's a whole ranch of them where you live, and you don't even know what a Cucamonga is.
Right? Exactly.
All right. Well, how long have you lived in the Cucamonga Ranch?
I've been there for 4.5 years.
Okay. Is it beautiful?
It really is. Super nice. Right up along the mountains off the 210 freeway.
That's fantastic. And what do you do for a living, Ralph?
I am in sales.
Okay.
I have a full-time job in sales and a part-time business also in sales.
What do you sell?
Well, that's kind of the reason for my call. I wanted to know what your take is on CBD.
I love it. You know why? Because I can't stand the drug companies. I really have it in for them. And I love, being holistic if you can. But I also don't appreciate, I'm very skeptical about people saying there's a shampoo that's going to grow hair back on top of my head. But I recommend CBD for people who come to see me where they have some inflammation. I would, smear that stuff on there. It's not going to make you high. It may come from hemp or marijuana. But why not? It doesn't seem to have the side effects. I don't know enough about it, but I have enough feedback from patients who tell me that they love using it. Is it the oil? Is it the cream? What brand to get? This, I have no clue, but I'm all for trying to be as holistic as possible. But recognize this. For anybody who's about to use it, please ask one question. Why do I have pain? Why do I have the inflammation? What is it that's causing it? Because to me, right, you're still just dealing with the symptoms. Someone who's coughing a lot wants Robitussin, which is great as a cough medicine. But if you're coughing because you have pneumonia, you need antibiotics to stop coughing, not Robitussin. So the CBD is a great anti-inflammatory. Good. Sometimes that's what you need. But you also need to ask yourself, am I doing too much exercise? Am I doing the wrong exercise? Too little. And that's my advice, Ralph. And thanks for checking in, because I got to scoot. I'll finish it up next week if you call in. Warriors, I leave you with Volare, which means I'm singing and I'm flying. Until next week, I'll see you on the radio.